Hey, I'm Brian. This is Winston. Welcome to Crossroads, a year in review 2018. We're looking back at some of the greatest moments in 2018 that might have moved you in a Crossroads context, and also trying to get some things in our mind as we go forward in 2018. We're going to take a look at some teaching clips, we're going to worship together, and we're going to see some art that just moved us. Didn't move Winston too much, but get out of here. We don't want you in here anyway. You want to pack? Maybe he does want to pack. So we're going to be looking at this beginning clip. Comes from Easter. And I just want you to sit in the truth of this. This is about no matter what 2018 looked like and no matter what 2019 might look like, the most powerful way to go into it is to let God. This is about letting God do in us what we can't do for ourselves.
Serpent's head I step when I breathe my final breath. The cords of death were cut in two. When it is finished, I spoke with you. I am, I am the one who comes to you. Fighting all your battles, let me. If you're backed against the wall and you're barely holding on, if you need someone to save you, let me. I see the wreckage of your life.
In America,
we still operate by this contractual understanding with God, whether it's contracting with the God of the Bible or contracting with any other God. And our belief is, if I do this, then God should do that for me. Some of us worship our bodies. We worship our physical health. And if you want to find somebody who's really upset, find somebody who has cancer. All of us should be upset when we have cancer. But if you find somebody who's had this contractual arrangement with the God of their health, and they haven't smoked, they haven't done coffee, they work out four times a day or four times a week, they wear the right stuff, they eat organic, and then that person comes down with cancer, the worldview is detonated because I held up my view. I held up my end of the bargain, so is thoughts. So why is this stuff happening to me? And bitterness comes in. Most atheists in America that I interact with are atheists because they're bitter that the contract wasn't fulfilled by what they thought God should do. Most atheists I interact with are very angry. They're angry at the lot of life. They're angry with something that's taken place in their life because they didn't deserve it. Because I did this, and so therefore the God or gods should do this for me. But let's make no mistake about it. Every single person worships. If you're an atheist, you worship. And I'll allow atheists to speak for themselves instead of me speak for atheists. I'll just like to quote David Foster Wallace, a well-known atheist who ended his life later with suicide. Before he did that, here's what he said. In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there is no such thing as atheism. And an outstanding reason for choosing some sort of God or spiritual type thing to worship, be it Jesus Christ or Allah, be it Yahweh or the Wiccan Mother Goddess or the Four Noble Truths or some infrangible set of ethical principles, is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. He's saying that if you worship body beautiful, it will eat you alive. It is bondage to keep yourself in tip-top physical health and expecting that God to always take care of you. If you worship at the altar of the stock market, it will eat you alive because every blip or every correction will utterly crush your identity. If you worship at the picture of family beautiful, the first time your child gets busted with weed, it will crush you because you thought you did everything and now this is happening. All of these false gods will let us down. In fact, any God, even the true God will let you down if you think he's bound to do certain things because of your contractual obligation to him. One of the gods that we have in America is America. When I was telling people about this series that we were doing and setting up the premise that Rome as an ancient empire went away, and if we were into any earthly empire, it will go away. And as I explained that America is an earthly empire, it will go away. It's just a matter of time. My goodness, the blowback. Whew. The blowback I got that was pretty profound. People thinking I was insulting our country, people thinking I wasn't valuing the work of our veterans. I'm so thankful for our veterans. I'm so thankful for our country. I'm very thankful to live in our country. I wouldn't want to live any place else than in America. And I don't worship America. America will not satisfy my soul. America will not be transcendent. America will not be eternal. And if you're uncomfortable about any of this sort of talk, guess what? Your God is America. That's your God is. This is called out. You're worshiping America. And that's why elections are so massive for those of us who worship America. Because my preferred God, the leader of my kingdom, isn't the one I wanted, whether it was somebody on the right or whether it's somebody on the left. And every national crisis actually becomes a faith crisis. Because the thing I'm standing on, the thing I'm worshiping, the thing that I'm giving my affections is letting me down. All of these gods, every last one that was in here, they're all gone. In fact, we can't even see their statues anymore. We've forgotten who these gods are in here. And someday, we will forget who the United States is. There's one God that has never been forgotten and will never be forgotten. He is the King of an eternal empire. His name is Jesus. And when we give Him our affections, it's not a contract where He promises to do certain things for us in a quid pro quo way. It's a covenant. He actually enters into a beautiful relationship with us that taps into the best things in our heart. Doesn't guarantee the best things will always happen in our life, but taps into the best things in our heart. He's someone who is worthy of our affections.
That was one of my favorite teaching moments in the Empire series when we went to Rome. You know, I don't care who you are, I don't care what you do, I do know that all of us have something that our heart revolves around, something that our lives revolve around, something that captures our affections. Some things that capture our affections are simple things, like Yeti captures my affections. I'll tell you what, if it says Yeti, I'm buying it. In fact, the things I'm not gonna buy are things that my kids have given me. I just got this last year, really good gift. Yes, Yeti makes a bucket. Yes, you laugh, but if you've ever felt the handle on the Yeti, it is amazing.
We've got a letter from one of our viewers here on, let's see here. Oh my goodness. I don't know what it says, but so far, I like the top letter. Oh. Hey there, thank you for reaching out to Yeti. We are honored that your boss is a big Yeti fan and wants to be a part of the Yeti Ambassador family. We've been absolutely astounded by the number of requests that we've been receiving. Unfortunately, this time, Yeti's not able to extend a sponsorship to Brian. What is this?
I like Yeti stuff, but really I don't worship Yeti stuff. Worship is whatever is at the center of your heart. Whatever is at the center of your checkbook, whatever is at the center of your emotions, whatever is at the center of your daydreaming, whatever your life revolves around, this is what we are to worship. And the book of Romans chapter 12, verse 1 says that this is our spiritual act of worship when we give our bodies, everything in our humanity over to God. Right now, we're gonna give over to God our vocal cords. We're gonna sing to God, and we're gonna sing with a song, a worship piece that came out of our Off the Grid series. And let's just worship God together right now.
You are able, thankful. find strength, a firm security. That again. When the war is mounted and I am surrounded, well, I find strength, a firm security. I find you, well, I find you.
To me, the resurrection means that grace has come to rule our lives, and grace always brings hope with it. My name is Allie, and I'm a pastor on staff here at Crossroads, and every spring I watch a picture of the resurrection happen in my very own front yard as the daffodils come up in my flower beds. I know how very girly of me to find pictures of Jesus in the flowers, but for real, I mean, these guys, they push up through the cold, nearly frozen ground into a landscape that still looks pretty committed to winter, and they just stand up straight and announce the spring. This is the resurrection. This is the moment that the grace of God pushed into our cold, dark world and announced new life, new hope, new possibilities. For most of us, it doesn't take a lot to look around and see the winter. We know that we live in a place that is dominated by death, by brokenness, and we live truly in winter. The Bible clearly explains this, saying that while we're born physically alive, we're actually born spiritually dead. From the first breath that you took, you were born dead. All of us together, one big family of the human race, barreling toward death, totally mastered by sin. But there is hope. And that hope is buried in a tiny little word called grace. Grace brings us something radical. Grace showed up in the resurrection, and it delivers to us one of the most astounding things I have ever heard, and that is the chance to be resurrected into the family of God right now with all the hope that it brings. I want you to hear how Ephesians describes this moment. Because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ even when we were dead in transgressions. It is by grace that you have been saved. By what? By grace. When you were dead, you were made alive by grace. That is hope. When you accept that you are dead and the death and resurrection of Jesus is the only way to life, that is the moment that grace begins to rule over your life. That's actually the moment of your own resurrection. Few of us know this. Even fewer believe it. Even fewer have the guts to really lean on this when everything looks like winter. But when grace starts to rule, hope, healing, restoration all become the new normal, and grace starts to do the job that grace came to do. The job of grace is to push in to the dark places that need hope and just explode them into light. That is the job of grace, and grace could not care less about its surroundings. The winter means nothing to grace. Doesn't matter how cold, how dark, how messy. Grace will bring new life. Too many of us respond to this offer of grace exactly like the people that saw the living Jesus resurrected. There were a number of people that saw him, and most of them responded in one of a few ways. They were either terrified, they were paralyzed in their own doubts, or they were absolutely just rejected it. And this is what we do. We don't even have a grid for being ruled by the power of grace. Instead, we just agree with our winter. And we stiff arm God, and we stiff arm the work of grace in our life. I was in an Easter service a couple of years ago, and it was the moment, right? It was the light was shining and Jesus was resurrected, and I was just sitting there, not really feeling it, and I heard one sentence. One sentence started to echo in my heart and mind, and it was, "You're living like I'm still in the tomb. You're living like I am still in the tomb." Jesus is not in the tomb. He's been resurrected, and the power of grace has offered us the chance to be resurrected too.
Man, I thought Allie did great this last Easter. In fact, I thought she did great all year. She really upped her game as a teacher this year, just bringing the heat. I know we're all just really, really thankful for her and the deposit she's been making into our life. I know resurrection power is something that I never grow weary of. I need it all the time. 2019 for me is going to be an intense year, as 2018 is. I've got unique family challenges as my family's been expanding. Crossroads continues to go just through uncharted territory where I haven't been before. And I know I don't have the resources in and of myself to handle the stuff that's going to come my way in 2019. I didn't in 2018 either, but God's made a way, and it's because of the power of Jesus. We need Easter every single day. Another thing that happened this last year was our Super Bowl service. It happens every year. And of course, again, I had to pound Chuck into applesauce in multiple ways. How do you make holy water? You boil the hell out of it.
What was the buffalo's last word to his son? Bye, son.
What's a pirate's favorite letter?
R.
You think so, but it's the C.
How did the hipster burn his tongue?
I don't know how.
He drank his coffee before it was cool.
There's just too many black stereotypes. Yeah, the Super Bowl is an amazing experience every year. And you know, every year, this is at least one time when you can bring a friend and you know they're gonna laugh, they're gonna have a good time, they're gonna be pushed, they're gonna be challenged, and maybe, just maybe, they may come to know God. So put that in your calendar. We'll be praying about it already, who it is that God wants you to invite into their life. Another thing that happened in 2018, as we sang, was we had a song that seemed to resonate with us more than any other song. I know whenever I was in a Crossroads location, this one seemed to have the most decibel response from people in the audience. It's one that was for a while on endless loop on my YouTube account and on my Spotify. And it's about God's love. It is so intense, it's actually reckless. And let's sing that to him right now.
Before I spoke a word, you were singing over me. You have been so, so good to me. Before I took a breath, you breathed your life in me. You have been so, so kind to me. Let's do that again. Before I spoke a word, you were singing over me. You have been so, so good to me. took a breath. Before I took a breath, you breathed your life in me. You have been so, so kind to me. And oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. Oh, it chases me down, fights till I'm found, leaves the 99. And I could earn it, and I don't deserve it. Will you give yourself away? And oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. Yeah. It's who you are. It's who you are. I was your foe, still your love fought for me. You have been so, so good to me. When I felt no worth, you paid it all for me. You have been so, so good.
Won't kick down, lie, you won't tear down, you're coming out. We're also in the radical middle. Those of us who were there, maybe you never knew. Maybe as I started talking, you realize, oh, I am the radical middle too. Oh, you are if you can't be categorized. In the radical middle, you can't categorize us at all. The right would hate me because I'm in support of more gun laws. And I own guns, a lot of them. But yet the right would hate me because I'm saying, yeah, we ought to be looking at a gun. The left would hate me because I would say an unborn female fetus is as valuable as a 40-year-old woman is. And the left can't take me that way. The right would love me because I want businesses to get bigger, and I want people to get more money. I want to see a lot of money, and I want to see businesses like cranking out the dough. So the right would love me for that. And the left would love me because I am very disheartened by the growing disparity in economics in our country, and I want more going for the poor. More, I always want more. So the left would love me on that. And I could just go all over the place. And if we kind of sat down and said, where are you? How do you categorize me? I don't know. You can't categorize someone in the radical middle, which is what's so disheartening about the whole national discussion we have. As soon as someone's categorized, and you're categorized by one thing, who you voted for, like, forget it. I know all about you, and I hate you. No, you probably should love that person. Right? Oh, I know about you. You and I are just like made. No, they might be nothing like you at all, except they made the wrong decision to vote for somebody. I don't know. But we categorize people so simply and in such a small-minded way. But we're used to that in the radical middle. In fact, in the radical middle, we like not being categorized. And we try to make it so that people don't even know how we vote and what we believe. We actually like the nebulousness, and we actually see that the Bible tells us to be this way. The author of much of the New Testament, the Apostle Paul, puts it this way. To the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I've become all things to all people, that by all means, I might save some. So here we see, it's a really great strategy. If you want to bless people, you want to love people, you want to have people get to know your God, if you know the one true living God, it's a really good strategy to not be categorized, because people will just disqualify what you say. Paul's saying, hey, when someone seems to be weak, I'm gonna accentuate my weakness. When someone seems to be strong, I'm gonna accentuate my strongness. When someone is Jewish, I'm gonna accentuate, hey, I've been circumcised. Not that you're gonna necessarily go show that around to people, but you know, you're gonna, when I'm around somebody who's like, they're not under the law, they're not under the Jewish thing, I'm not gonna eat all kosher around them. And as soon as you start putting stuff in your social media feed that makes it really clear where you are, let's be really clear, your potency in life is cut in half. The amount that God will use you is cut in half, because you just cut off half of the people that you could bless, you could influence. It's just eliminated because you had to take a stand. Now, you took a stand, all right, and you lessened the impact of your life. And the Bible tells me to have the most impactful life possible. So Jesus told me to do this. This is how he ordered his life, and this is what this instruction says.
I don't know that radical middle talk was the favorite talk I gave all year, but I do know it was a talk I had the most burn for coming into the year. Folks, we're too divided, and we're just too upset about politics. We're just way, way, way upset. When I meet somebody who gets it, I feel like I have a kindred spirit with them. I went to a business of somebody who owns it out of our Georgetown community in Kentucky. If you're looking to have a beer, this is the place to go if you're anywhere near Georgetown, Kentucky. It's actually the first place you could have a beer since Prohibition. They opened up a few years ago. It's pretty awesome. It's a really cool like pub hangout kind of thing, but that's the vision of it is not the thing for me. This is why I love it. It's like, here's the thing. I am Democrat, Republican, I am having a beer. You know, we need to just have more beers and have less political fights. I think if we started having our allegiance to Jesus, we would stop getting as worked up as we are in our world. Let's live lives that are just different. One of the ways that we're different is that we don't worship money. We want to release money. So we're going to actually have a time to give right now. You can go to crossroads.net/giving. And you'll see stories of people who've been touched, who've been moved. This is the way that we fuel and fund the movement that happens all over the world. So you can do that now or at any moment for a tax-deductible donation here at the end of the year, or set up recurring stuff going on into your future. And we're hoping you're seeing that we're doing everything we can to impact your life. And hopefully this broadcast has impacted your life as well. Share it with whoever you know. I know there's probably something in it that God will use to stimulate them to go to a whole new level. That's what we're trying to do. Get all of us to go to a whole new level of understanding God and being devoted to Him and the nitty-gritty details of our life. In 2019, we've got another cool thing coming up. It's something that we did in 2018. It's a worship concert. We filmed over a couple days some worship songs that we have written, and we performed them, and man, it was powerful. So that's coming in 2019. And let me pray for us today, and then if you want, stick around. We're going to give you a little sample of what that worship concert video is going to look like. So let me pray for you. God, I thank you for 2018. I know for some of us, it was just a tough one, and we're glad it's over. For all of us going into 2019, we want a great year. And God, I want you to shower your grace on every sector of our lives in 2019. And so would you do that for us as we pray today and as we end our time together. And I pray these things according to the character and identity of Jesus. Amen.
This is your moment. Transform your mind. Secure your weapon. Hope, a powerful strength that sustains the mind, body, and soul. Except this year, actually do it. As your mind goes, so goes your life. Make 2019 a year of the new mind.